right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. I am unfortunately not joined by my co-host, my notorious compadre, Mr. Aaron Malone today. He is MIA, and no, he is not actually in the MIA where a lot of the other folks are in Miami. He was supposed to be there, but believe it or not, his flights got canceled, so he got hunkered down here in California, and he's just hanging it up. He's hanging up the Jordans, and he's really bummed out. So I'm not sure what he's up to today. He wishes he was in Miami, but regardless, we are joined by a fantastic guest here on the podcast today, a specialist, a product specialist, the product lead at IBC, Charlie Fay. Welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast.
Thanks. It's quite an introduction. I hope that I can live up to it.
No, we're going to have a lot of fun. And you've been focused on all sorts of different aspects of the Cosmos ecosystem. And we've been big fans of Cosmos and the Atom token here at Crypto 101 for a long time. But before we dive into all that stuff, let's just get acquainted and tell the audience a little bit about your background and how you found yourself, you know, building products in the crypto sphere.
Yeah, so I'll apologize in advance because it's a little bit of a convoluted story, which I think is probably the case for a lot of people here.
Exactly. Nobody has a straight and narrow path.
No one studied crypto in school, you know, majored in crypto and then got a job. But yeah, I mean, what I did study in school, though, I studied political science. My aim was kind of always to go to law school and work as a lawyer. Actually, it was to work in refugee law, kind of immigration law. I did some work there in university and found out that just emotionally and psychologically it was like not something I could sustainably work in. I think I still wanted to work in law, was really interested in at the time also open source and kind of like open source copyright, open source software. So I started by getting a master's in intellectual property law, and that took me over to Europe. And what I realized is after leaving my job that I could actually get a job as legal counsel for Intel. So I did that in the Munich office for a year and a half, realized that working as a lawyer was not the same as studying law. And I realized at that time, you know, crypto law hadn't really started yet. And so the working in law was just not as dynamic of a field. And I really wanted something that was a lot more vibrant or lively. I wanted to have the feeling that I was able to kind of like see the effects of my work before my eyes. And so I left law. I learned how to code. And luckily enough, I was living in Berlin at the time. And Berlin, as I guess a lot of you know, is one of the major hubs of crypto. I was always interested in crypto, I think, but because of my background, more from a political viewpoint, also from a personal viewpoint, living in Europe, you know, constantly sending money back to the US to pay off student loans or do whatever. It was just like one of those things where I felt like it really made, it made sense to me. But then also politically, I really thought that this narrative of having a interconnected, global, borderless world was something that I really believed in, just for a while. So I think it was a confluence of a lot of different factors that brought me into crypto. I think working in crypto has hit all those sweet spots I talked about working on something I believe in and working something that's really moving at a pace that makes me happy. So
that's awesome. And really well explained. And I guess my next question kind of is, how did you kind of hone in on the Cosmos ecosystem on IBC? And I know, you mentioned your Berlin base and Interchain is, very, very big German presence. Was it that, or was there something specific about maybe the ethos of Cosmos that really attracted you?
Yeah, it was both, because prior to joining Cosmos, I actually worked in the Ethereum space for a few years as an engineer. I was working on a DeFi product called Centrifuge.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I think it was a very good experience. Like I love the Ethereum ecosystem, and I think the ethos there is also really great. What I didn't like so much was working on a DeFi application in the sense of that as an engineer, I felt like, you know, like I think DeFi is a really important application of crypto, but as an engineer, I really had the feeling that I was doing a lot of financial engineering and not really like this kind of like nuts and bolts, like infrastructure building that I really wanted to get my hands on. So I knew one of the Cosmos ecosystem, leader, Billy Rennekamp. He's the Hub project lead. And I knew him just from running into each other at meetups and kind of speaking in the Berlin scene. And I obviously knew of Cosmos about IVC and Tendermint. I think they're two of the most battle-tested protocols in interoperability and, you know, consensus that exists in like the entire stack across crypto. So when he offered me the chance to join the team, I was definitely really stoked. Yeah. And I'm really happy that I was able to join IVC, because I think as someone who is interested in kind of like very important base level infrastructure, which really pushes the frontier of crypto forward, I think IVC is really that.
Yeah. And IVC, for everyone who's kind of wondering, they're like, wait, I've never heard this term. I own Cosmos tokens, but I don't know what IVC is. It's inter-blockchain communication. And this Tendermint is the sort of shared consensus protocol through all sorts. So we'll dive into those from like a little technical perspective a little bit more. But I think one of the things we should clear out of the way first is the difference between Ethereum and Cosmos, because a lot of people are very familiar with, you know, the DeFi applications. Oh, I could go, I could yield farm on this, and or I could have this AMM sort of decentralized exchange. And they're all built on smart contracts, but Cosmos is a fundamentally different architecture. Could you kind of walk us through just like some of the differences there?
Yeah. So I think one of the biggest differences is you can think about Ethereum as its own platform. So you have all of these applications which are launching on Ethereum. They obviously have their own tokens, but underneath all of them, what you're paying for gas fees is the Ethereum token. And that's all because all of these applications are running kind of on the same machine. So there's good and bad things about that. On the one hand, you know, you can have immediate, if you launch an application on Ethereum, you can have immediate access to all of these other applications. You can very easily, you know, communicate from one to another. You can, for example, yield farm, move your tokens from that yield farming into another liquidity pool, et cetera. Like, it's all kind of straightforward because it's all on Ethereum. On Cosmos, I should talk about the trade-off. The trade-off there is obviously, you know, the cost of that, like financially. I think we all know it's very expensive to transact on Ethereum.
Gas fees are nuts.
And the reason that they're nuts is because the machine that everyone is trying to operate on, the more people try to operate on that machine, the more gas or the more expensive it's necessarily going to be, the more work that machine has to do. So in Cosmos, the founders of Cosmos, Jay and Ethan Buckman, they kind of saw this problem coming in 2016. And so they wanted to create a different design where not every single application had to launch on the same machine, but each application could have its own machine. And so the idea that let's say your yield farming application or your DeFi product is going to have its own machine, and then that machine can interact through something like IBC, the Inter-Blockchain Communication Protocol, to another machine, which handles its own specific work that it's doing. And you can basically specialize, or you can build a specialized machine, which is super customized for your product so that it doesn't cost as much. And then just use the value generated from your machine and have a transaction with another machine. That's kind of like more of the model I think Cosmos is geared towards. And yeah, it's kind of funny because I think in 2016, the initial thesis that Ethan and Jay had, with having self-owned machines with their own consensus and connecting to each other through interoperability protocols, and it's what we see now. I mean, like what they saw in the past, that kind of crazy premonition years ago, it's kind of what is now, I think, the mainstream narrative.
Totally, and it really was very prescient, because back then in 2016, right? I mean, that was the first year that I was in crypto, and people didn't know if there was going to be a multi-chain world. People were like, oh, it's just going to be Bitcoin. That was like probably the majority of people were like, it's just going to be a single chain world. And then on the fringe, you had guys like Jay and Ethan and all sorts of different people that are like, no, it's going to be a multi-chain world, and started to build, the Lightning Network and all these different side chains and layer twos. And, Polkadot kind of came up around that time. And then all of a sudden, now we have this multi-chain world where, you know, Cosmos is now at the center of it. And many, 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 many different applications are built on it and secured by it. In fact, one of the most popular smart contract platforms, Terra Luna, is dependent upon Cosmos. And so could you kind of talk about the relationship between Cosmos as kind of like that layer zero and how something like Luna or the Terra ecosystem leverages it.
Yeah. I mean, I think Terra is a really great example, because I think for Terra, you know, when they were starting, the value proposition for them from Cosmos, which is, I think, the reason why they chose Cosmos, is that, you know, they could use the Cosmos SDK. So Terra is a Cosmos SDK chain. They're built using this blockchain toolkit that the Cosmos funding, or that the Cosmos ecosystem builds and the ICF funds. And then their consensus protocol is Tendermint, this kind of engine that we mentioned before. But what they were able to do with that is have all of these tools that they needed to build a blockchain that really was powerful for them and their use cases, but they didn't have to buy, you know, they didn't have to buy like a whole bunch of this X number of token in order to get it. And so they could build a really powerful platform and have everything on their own terms, and then use something like IBC to connect to other blockchains where other blockchains can then be exposed to products built on Terra and vice versa. I think what has inevitably happened alongside of that, though, is that the value of Atom, which is the Cosmos token, has risen. And I think this is, interestingly enough, a lot of questions that that we get is how is the value of Atom being linked to kind of like all of this growth in the Cosmos ecosystem? And I think you can kind of see what's been doing in that the Atom value has been tracking the value of the Cosmos ecosystem since it was launched in 2017. I think we saw it gain a dramatic amount of value over the last year. And I don't think that was an accident, because I think, in my opinion, it really has a lot to do with IBC, the Stargate upgrade, and just the accrual of value across all of these interoperable blockchains. You know, Terra is huge. Crypto.com is also a Cosmos chain. Osmosis is also a Cosmos chain. Believe it or not, Binance is also a Cosmos chain. So I think it's just that the fact that the Atom is one of the most liquid tokens in the Cosmos ecosystem, it's the most liquid trading pair on Osmosis, it's going to be the most secure zone with the largest and most secure validator set. So when we have upcoming features like interchain staking, interchain security, interchain accounts, I think you'll really see this whole like thesis of what does interoperability mean on a large scale and how much value that can generate just flourish.
Yeah, it's dizzying to think about how big this can really get. And like, just in, you know, I was telling my fiance just a moment ago before I hopped on this interview, I was like, you know, what's funny is that in March 2020, remember that day I woke up and we were down 50% on our Bitcoin overnight? You remember that? She's like, yeah, that was crazy. I was like, Tezos was $1, Cosmos was $1. Now, fast forward, you know, 2 years, Cosmos is $40, Tezos is $4. There's a 10x differential. And that to me was just so telling of like, you know, there's so much development on the Cosmos network with, you know, I saw, you know, 250 applications and services and growing. Tell us a little bit more about, you know, you mentioned Osmosis, which is one of the most liquid, I mean, it is the most liquid DEX on Cosmos. What are some other apps that, you know, listeners should kind of go check out that you think might be promising or interesting? Anything that kind of is unique to Cosmos?
I mean, I think it depends a lot on what people are interested in. So I think like one of the nice things about the Cosmos ecosystem is that because it is so easy to spin up your own chain and hook in, there's just a huge diversity of products that are available. So I mean, on the DeFi bucket, which you kind of started with, you know, Osmosis and Terra are kind of the big ones, but I think you're going to start to see a lot of NFT marketplaces pop up in the next few months. I know there's already several in the Terra ecosystem, but there will be NFT specific marketplaces that are popping up. Pylons is one that I have off the top of my head. Stargaze, I think there's generally like as NFTs grow, and I think this is also another difference between Ethereum and Cosmos, is that these marketplaces or these NFT products are their own chains. And so it's not so much that you need to depend on liquidity from another chain to kind of fuel these NFTs. It's like, okay, this NFT is actually its own chain, and therefore it can be used more powerfully. I think programmable NFTs is a huge aspect, which we're going to see coming up. On the more social goods commons side, which I think is very integral to the ethos of Cosmos, Regen and like carbon credit financing has always been one of the leading supporters of the Cosmos SDK. They've put a lot of work there, but I think their product is also going to flourish and get larger. And then as well, the kind of more infrastructural level things like the smart contracting platforms, Agoric with Run Protocol, Juno and its kind of smart contract network. So I think, yeah, across the board, there are a lot of different ways that people could participate in the Cosmos ecosystem.
So after peaking at $68,000 in mid-November, Bitcoin has dropped by roughly 40%. So no one said flying the DeFi flag was going to be easy. But what if I told you that your portfolio might be overweight in Bitcoin? In fact, you might also want to consider diversifying into other alternative assets, perhaps like blue chip art. In some cases, actually, paintings have seen appreciation similar to crypto over the long term. For instance, a Picasso painting recently sold for $103 million at an auction. And that's a 1,400% increase from its original price at auction. And now there's a new platform that lets you invest in paintings like that without needing to be a gazillionaire. And over 310,000 investors have signed up. And just the other day, they had a $7.4 million Banksy painting that sold out in under 3 hours. Now, I've partnered with this platform and got you all priority access to their newest paintings. And so all you got to do is log on to masterworks.io/crypto101. Again, that's masterworks.io/crypto101. Again, masterworks.io/crypto101. And you can check out all the good stuff they got on their platform. So I want you guys as well to see the important disclosures that are at masterworks.io/disclaimer. And we're also going to link to those in the show notes. And now I kind of want to harken back to a company you mentioned that you worked for prior, Centrifuge or a foundation or whatever project. And I'm curious about kind of like the application of real world assets. I think this is going to be a trend where like these real world assets kind of get married to the blockchain through these NFTs and stuff. Are there any projects that are kind of working on something similar to Centrifuge on Cosmos?
So I think in terms of the specific, like there's not a Centrifuge chain, as in I don't think there's a chain that's like tokenizing NFTs, but I do know that there are projects being launched on a chain called FMOS, which is basically the Cosmos SDK, like a Cosmos SDK setup that has Ethereum virtual machine integrated in it. And so what that actually means is that you can actually write Solidity smart contracts directly on a Cosmos SDK chain. So you can kind of like use all of the existing tooling built by Ethereum and launch it on a Cosmos SDK chain. And I know on FMOS, there's a lot of, because there is so much of these types of projects in the Ethereum space that people are starting to port over these types of projects and build it on FMOS just because they don't have to, they can do the same things, but you know, where it takes 50 cents to mint an NFT on Centrifuge, it'll take, you know, like 0.05 cents to mint it on FMOS. So I think, yeah, that's probably the direction that's going to go.
I like that. Now kind of switching gears a little bit, given the tough competition between existing networks that are vying for dominance, what do you think is the most, I guess, effective way to incentivize collaboration between teams and projects?
I think collaboration has proven its own incentives, actually. Like I know that there is this kind of zero-sum belief when we talk about a market. Like I think that when we talk about let's say, you know, like selling your tokens in a market, there is this kind of like understanding that if someone buys my token, that means they won't buy your token. But I actually don't think that that is necessarily true in a world that has a very interoperable and very composable set of blockchain applications. And so what I mean is that in the Ethereum application sense, you kind of need to build the entire flow of your application in order to control like the entire flow of value. Because you want the value to kind of circulate in your application and have your token price rise. Mm-hmm. But I think in Cosmos, their understanding there is that your application can be part of a distributed business process in the same way that different producers or suppliers are part of a larger supply chain. And so what you're participating in is not like, no one is trying to, no one is going to say, oh, I don't want to work on my part of supply chain because that's good. Like your part of supply chain is going to come. It's like, no, we're all working on different parts of the supply chain. And ultimately the value capture in the entire supply chain is what benefits all of us. So I think that is the ethos and kind of also technical possibility that Cosmos ecosystem brings.
Yeah, and like in the same way that there's like liquidity mining on Ethereum, where, you know, new projects incentivize usage and adoption by giving rewards, is there something similar in the Cosmos ecosystem?
Yeah, I think the Cosmos airdrops are pretty famous right now, just because there have been a lot of airdrops where if you hold one token, you get airdrops from another. I think the reason for that is kind of just what I went through, is that people recognize that composability is really powerful, and this kind of shared sense of service is something that'll benefit a lot of projects. And so concretely, I guess what I'm talking about is in the Cosmos ecosystem is something like we have a project like Sommelier, which does a lot of liquidity pool kind of investments on the Ethereum side. They work with Uniswap smart contracts and then and put Cosmos assets there. They're not connected right now through Osmosis, but with something like interchain accounts through IBC, they will directly be able to take the value that's generated in Sommelier pools and then do reinvestments in Osmosis liquidity pools. And so that almost creates a new service offering that benefits both Sommelier and Osmosis. It's kind of like a supply chain that's been extended now. And then that's why they're kind of like the people who hold Osmo and the people who hold Sommelier are happy when they both succeed, you know?
Yeah.
It all works together.
It's much more of an altruistic sort of environment, I would say.
I mean, I don't even know if I'd call it altruistic. It's like, you're still getting the monetary benefit, like token price still go up, you know, but it's more just like, it's not as much of a zero sum game.
Very well said. Is there a future where Polkadot and Cosmos ever talk to each other?
Yeah, actually, it's funny you mentioned that. There are two different Substrate-like clients that will connect the Cosmos, that will connect Cosmos IBC to basically the Kusama or Polkadot setup. So I think we'll see the first of those completing. I think we'll probably see the early versions released potentially even at the end of this quarter, but by quarter two for sure.
Nice. Now, what do you kind of think about, I saw this recently, and since you're on the tech development side, and you see a lot of these flows, I saw something that said in 2021, there was 3 times the amount of job postings for blockchain devs and crypto job postings than there was just general tech industry. So are you seeing a massive increase in interest from like traditional web developers saying, okay, crypto and blockchain and NFTs, these are now something that I want to kind of get my hands on, or is this just kind of headlines?
I definitely see it. I think when you look at our hiring pipelines, they've also gotten, I think, just like the number of people who apply, but also the types of people who apply have definitely, it's definitely like aligned to what you just said, for sure. Nice. I would add that I think it seems that people are interested in technology, obviously, but I also think that it's something about the ethos that draws them here. Because I think working in the space, you're working with a lot of really smart people who care about what we do, but also I think there are a lot of people who understand that we are, that, you know, like people are autonomous, people kind of have their own, they want to make a difference in what they work on. And so a lot of people are coming from maybe bigger, more hierarchical, kind of rigid organizations where they're a little bit constrained in their jobs. And I think crypto gives them, or working in the crypto industry gives them the freedom to push that envelope a little bit and say, okay, what do I really want from my job? Like, what do I want to work on?
I could not agree more. I think crypto caters to this, like, you know, working in crypto just caters to this new distributed sort of work from remotely wherever sort of environment. And crypto is just being, being the benefactor of that sort of trend, I would say. Now, one question, like switching gears a bit, you know, is what clear gaps still exist in the industry? Like for on your day to day, like what gets in your way? Is it a certain regulation? Is it a certain lack of data standard? I mean, there's a million and one things that we need in this burgeoning industry, but from your perspective, what's like super crucial this year?
I think like lack of clear regulation is obviously a big one. It affects everything from how we finance ourselves to what kind of products we feel like we can build. I think another thing though is probably the, like whenever you look at it on a product level, I think it's the usability aspect. So I think crypto as a whole is still very much focused on infrastructure. I mean, I myself am one of these people. And I think the biggest obstacle to mass adoption and to bringing these kind of worlds into fruition is really having more work done on usability. And I guess that comes from the crypto side, but I think also from the other side, it's like, I don't want to say it's an onus on anyone. Like it's onus on us to educate other people. But I think a lot of people maybe they buy into a narrative and then they don't really dig a little bit further, like, okay, what is behind that narrative? And what am I actually, you know, what token am I actually buying? And so I just like, I like to encourage people to kind of also do a little bit more education on the technical aspects of crypto and rather just than the currency or kind of like tokenization aspect.
No, that's fantastic. Now, Charlie, before I kind of move into a couple closing questions, is there anything I missed? Is there anything that you really would like to highlight about IBC, Interchain, maybe ICF, Cosmos ecosystem, anything that's on the roadmap, anything that you're excited about building, upcoming announcements, anything, any questions I should have asked that I totally missed?
Yeah, I mean, maybe just to highlight that, I think over the course of this past year, we've been doing a lot of, I would say, consolidation and organization of different features we've been working on over the last few years. And so the roadmap ahead is going to be really exciting. So I would just kind of point users to look out for three different features specifically coming from IBC and the Cosmos Hub. So that would be, I mentioned these before actually, but I can just quickly sketch out a little bit what those would be and what they enable. Yeah, so the first is Interchain staking. So for those people who are familiar or are not are familiar, staking is kind of the process where you take your token and you delegate it to the validator of a chain. And you say, here, I vouch for you that you are validating for this chain. And therefore, whenever the validator gets rewards for securing the chain, then you also get a portion of those rewards. What that actually means, I mean, obviously in the positive, you get part of the rewards. On the negative, it means that your token is effectively locked up. So you can't really move it around while you're staking to a validator. But what we want to do is enable something like staking that you can basically stake on a chain, but then you would be able to get staking derivative tokens from that. And that allows you to stake across multiple chains and have this kind of like more liquid staking format, which will basically enable you to maximize your assets. This obviously requires the chains to be able to communicate with each other. And that's where this interoperability protocol aspect comes in. But I think it'll make it a lot more powerful as a token holder. You can really maximize the value of your tokens. The second one is interchain security. And this is to do with chains who want to launch, but let's say don't want to do the political effort of organizing a bunch of validators to run their nodes. Offerings from chains like the Hub, who has already a large validator group, means that interchain security means that the Hub would be able to basically lease its security to chains who want to focus their dev efforts on the products and maybe not on running a validator set.
Wow, so that's really cool. It's like, you know, there's so many crypto projects that are out there that like, you know, they're application developers but they're not crypto specialists. And so exactly. Being able to kind of you know, get a vendor basically to do the hard stuff for you. You just focus on the application and then boom, you got yourself a crypto project.
Yeah, it's kind of like hooking into, I guess the Web3 model would be like hooking into Amazon Web Services and getting your service done by them rather than having to do all of that yourself. You can just focus on writing that. Yeah, and the last one is Interchain Accounts, which I'm personally really excited for because it's being pushed by the IBC team. But basically what it means is that Right now, we still have blockchains that are kind of interacting within their own chain, you know, and then through, they make a transfer to another chain, either through a token or NFT or something else. But interchain accounts enables kind of this use case that I talked about before, where you can think about blockchains more like each blockchain is no longer a whole, like it is its own ecosystem, but it can also be like one smart contract in a larger smart contract ecosystem, or like one part of a supply chain connecting to another part of a supply chain. So in the same way that if you have two smart contracts in a Solidity product and they can basically call between each other, you would have the same where you have like, let's say a token, which is being generated on Sommelier, and directly you can kind of transact that token into Osmosis. And you don't have to first like ship the token, open an account Osmosis, ship it to that account on Osmosis, and then use your Osmosis account to do something else.
Right, there's so no like wrapping.
Yeah, and kind of from a wallet point of view, for example, like you would just need one, like let's say one account on Sommelier, and then Sommelier chain will have accounts on Osmosis that can do all the interactions you need to do with Osmosis, so that as a user, you don't need to like do all the hard work of carrying your tokens around and opening
an abstraction layer.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's fantastic. There's a whole lot more than I actually even knew going on behind the scenes. And, you know, I'm, you know, full disclosure, a big Atom holder, and my affiliates are as well. And we're really bullish on this entire ecosystem. So Charlie, thank you so much for coming on. Before we let you go, we just have a couple questions that we like to ask every guest. And this is just a real simple, you know, for those of us who are listening and it's our first time listening to a crypto podcast, our minds are blown. We're just like, whoa, what just happened? What did I listen to? I thought I was going to learn how to trade and I just learned about technical stuff. What do you tell these people that is, you know, the very first time listening to a crypto podcast, just a word of wisdom from an OG in the space?
Yeah, I would say that it's honestly a skill to separate the signal from the noise. Like I would say if you're feeling overwhelmed or confused, you are not alone. And I am still there all the time. You know, everyone who works in crypto, I think, has those moments where we're like, wow, what is happening? My Twitter feed has just exploded over the last 6 days. But I think that it's a skill that you just get from kind of exposing yourself to more informed, maybe not informed is not the right word, but I would say like, this is kind of what I was saying before, like digging a little bit under the narratives of some of what people are saying on Twitter, you know,
more than like, meets the eye.
Exactly. Like if this token price is going out, it's like, why? Maybe like educate. And then the more you kind of understand about these transactions and what's actually happening behind the scene, the more you can understand, okay, this is signal or this is noise. But it takes time. It's honestly, yeah,
we're still all getting our research kind of tools sharpened day by day.
Exactly. So you are not alone.
And then last one, we always just like to ask like of one other person that you kind of want to give a shout out to, maybe someone we should follow on Twitter that you like, or someone whose work you've been inspired by, or someone you admire.
Yeah. A tough question.
And you could rattle off a couple if you want.
Yeah. I guess maybe my choice would be, it's a little bit to do with my own personal journey of getting into Cosmos, maybe specifically, but when I first joined the Cosmos ecosystem from Ethereum, I was very overwhelmed by, you know, a lot of new entities, new technology. I didn't know what I should focus on. And kind of one of the people that gave me a lot of mentorship at that time was the guy who's now leading FMOS, Federico. At that time, he was a core developer at ICF, where I now work. And I remember he was really busy he was one of the core IBC developers, but he kind of made a lot of time for me to introduce me to that ecosystem and to make sure that I had some tools to separate the signal from the noise. And I think FMOS, of course, is a really great project, you know, but I think also personally, I think people like Federico, there are many of them in the Cosmos ecosystem. I think it's one of the ecosystem that has the most, you know, Zaki Mannion, Jack Zamplin, Ethan Frey, like Dean Tribble from Agoric, like Billy Ranacamp. I could go on and on, honestly, but I think there is a great environment of camaraderie and support in the ecosystem. Fede was, you know, number one for me, but I've been helped by all of the people that I just mentioned and many, many more that I should mention, but I just didn't have them on the top of my head.
No, I second you about Jack. He's been on the podcast before. So all of you listeners who like this, go back, check out Jack Zamplin's podcast. And also shout out to Tess Rainierson, who was on the podcast as well. You know, she talked a little bit about consensus algorithms and stuff. So if you guys are interested in the Cosmos ecosystem, go back on the Crypto 101 podcast list, go listen to those. And without further ado, Charlie, we'll talk to you soon when there's some big more updates. We'll bring you back on.
Great. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Take care.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.